It is Saturday, October 17, 2009, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California.
The bandwidth for GeekSpeak.org is provided by GNI, GNIHosting.com.
It's time now for GeekSpeak. Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. I'm currently in Washington, D.C. at WAMU, the American University Radio, 88.5 in D.C. And I'm currently here in Washington because National Public Radio is having a wonderful conference about public media. And Steve Laufer, the webmaster for KUSP, and myself are here as the treat of NPR to participate in this wonderful collaborative effort to understand public media more. We're talking about public media, we're talking about social computing and that kind of thing. Maybe we'll chat about a little bit about that in a few minutes. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, well, is no one because I'm in D.C., but in the air in California, our fellow geeks, Al Luckow, a new media architect. Morning, Al.
Hi, everybody.
Ben Jaffe, a freelance media guy and Stanford instructor.
Hello, hello.
And helping us help you donate to KUSP is KUSP station manager Terry Green. Terry, thanks for being here.
Glad to be part of this first transcontinental Geek Speak.
And it's a wonderful time to do that because, of course, we're doing we're finishing today in just a few hours our pledge drive. And how are we doing on the numbers, Terry?
We have $17,500 left to go to hit our overall budgetary goal for the drive, and we're scheduled to finish at 1 o'clock this afternoon. So there is no time like the present to move to the phones and make your pledge of support.
And, of course, you can do that right now, 888-777-1507. And we'll be asking again. But first, let's start with some news. Hey, Ben.
Hey, how's it going? Before I do news, I just want to give some thank yous really fast to Mark from Scotts Valley, Steve from Santa Cruz, thank you, Duff from Felton, and we have an anonymous donor from Santa Cruz. So thank you all very much. So my news story is a bit of a somber one. There is a major snow leopard bug out there.
So if you have a snow leopard, keep it inside. Don't let it play in the park.
Yeah, exactly. You really want to keep it in the box. ideally,
snow leopard,
just
of course, is Macintosh OS X's most recent operating system, Apple's operating system.
Indeed. And the bug, this kind of a serious bug, it can wipe out all user data for the administrative account if you do things wrong.
Yeah, what's the
really,
big deal?
Really, really bad news. Well, okay, for me, it wouldn't be a big deal because I have a backup. This is just a way of reminding everyone, back up your computers, please, please, please. The bug is triggered sometimes intermittently when you log into the guest account, which is new in Snow Leopard activated, and then back into your administrative account. And I guess the reason probably is something to do with the fact that when you log into the guest account and then you log back out, it clears everything on the guest account, right? So that way you don't, if you have a guest on your computer, you don't necessarily want all of their cookies and logins to be stored. And so that's the idea behind the guest account. But apparently sometimes this can happen with your admin account. And Apple has acknowledged this bug. Big, big bad news.
But so, you want to make sure, too, that people realize that it's not really that common for you to do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like if you have a computer and it's just yours, chances are you don't really log out of your account.
Well, Ben, I also heard about this bug that it only is triggered if you've upgraded to Snow Leopard.
Yeah, that's the other thing I've heard. I'm not sure if that's if there are counterexamples to that. But,
so right now, I would say the best thing to do to make sure you're totally safe is to have an external storage of your system.
Yeah,
and of course, Snow Leopard and even the previous just Leopard had great built-in backups, and that's with Time Machine. And really, all you have to do is get an external hard drive. And if your data is important to you, do that. I mean, think about just having nothing on your computer available anymore. That can happen at any time. Hardware failure is the most common way of that happening.
It's good advice for any time. I have a buddy who told me yesterday he was messing around with Terminal and Mac, and he put in some commands, and sure enough, he ended up wiping out like half his applications and everything. And he's like, what the heck? Where is everything? And then luckily, he's like, I have a Time Machine backup. And it took a little while. It took, like an hour or something, but it completely restored his machine just from the Time Machine, built-in Time Machine stuff that he never even really paid attention to.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Ben, for that Snow Leopard bug. Back up your machine.
Yeah.
And we got your robot news coming up in just a second. But first, Terry, what's going on?
Well, we are updating the tally board even as we speak. We have dropped under $17,000 left to raise in the drive. The number now is $16,600 left to make our budgetary goal for the fall membership drive. Our phone answerers are poised and in position, and your support is welcome direct at KUSP.org or by the phone 1-888-777-1507.
And I just want to let you know that, you know, if you're going on a trip to discover someplace new, you want to bring a tour guide along. To do some research ahead of time, make sure that your experience is really good. You don't want to be doing what I just did, which is crossing D.C. in the rain with an iPhone with bad reception, because then you might miss your live radio show connection to California from D.C., and that would be tragic. So to do that, help someone guide you through everything that's out there. That's what KUSP does. That's what we do every day. We're your trusted source of information and knowledge about music, about the arts, about news and culture, and listener support makes it all possible. Call right now, 888-777-1507, or give an online pledge at kusp.org.
The cost of a KUSP membership is whatever it is you want it to be. KUSP has no minimum membership level. Our goal is to get as many listeners as possible to be part of the solution, to be part of what makes the station work, and we want to make that affordable for you. We can take installment payments, say $10 a month for 12 months, adds up to $120 for us. We can work out a payment plan that works for you. The point is that we want you as part of the station, as part of what makes KUSP go, and today's the last chance to do it. We're planning to end the drive on time. We still have funds to raise. You can be part of the solution when you call right now.
The numbers are 888-777-1507. That's a toll-free number to help you call right now, 1-888-777-1507. And just to be clear, right now, though I'm in D.C., quite a ways away from wonderful California, I would love to hear your calls come in. I'd love to have some contributions happen during this hour of Geek Speak. You're listening now, and so now's the time to call. Again, 888-777-1507. That's 1-888-777-1507. Or give online. Go to KUSP.org. Al, what's going on with robots?
Cockroaches.
That's not a robot. That's an organism that breathes.
Well, yes, but apparently the powers that be have decided that the normal organic cockroach needs some sort of robot equivalent, simply because we don't have enough cockroaches. Maybe if we make more cockroaches, this probably goes in line with the robot rat. It's the same kind of thing.
Right.
And actually, you know, as I introduced this story, I realized that there are a lot of robot cockroaches already. This is not a new thing, because people have been developing robot cockroaches for a long time. Just because they can, I guess. This particular cockroach now that is just coming out, it's being developed in California. It's called the Dynamic Autonomous Sprawled Hexapod, or DASH. It's being developed at the UC Berkeley's Biometric Millisystems Lab. Now, this particular cockroach can be dropped 92 feet and still move quickly and just run away. So you can drop it, I guess 93 feet is right out. You can't drop it 93 feet, but according to this story, you can drop this cockroach 92 feet, and then it's just completely fine, and then it just, you know, scampers away.
Al, 92 of its feet, or 92
of our feet.
Okay.
Yes. It's 4 inches, it's 16 grams, it's a bug, and it's put together by folding cardboard and polymer sheets, so it's a really kind of a easy to assemble robot. A DC motor runs the 6 legs while a servo motor bends the frame to induce left or right turns. So it just sort of bends itself to move around. Really
neat.
It's neat. It's creepy and neat at the same time. You know, and I guess having, you know, more of these cockroach robots is a goal. Somebody has a goal to create more of these things. So
that's a creepy crawly kind of thing. Now, don't some cockroaches fly?
Yes, which
is this?
Which
God,
brings me to my next robot. This actually, this one's really, really cool. I would, if you listen to Geek Speak and you know we talk about these
and
links,
you do.
Well, you must be right now.
Right. If you didn't,
at this moment, if you're hearing me, you're listening to Geek Speak, or you're just like moving around. This particular robot is called. It's It's called an indoor autonomous helicopter. And it's like a tiny helicopter, about 2 feet by 2 feet. It's a complete platform for indoor autonomous flight. And it's developed under Nick Roy in the Robust Robotics Group at CSAIL. That's the Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory at MIT. But that'd be cool to be working there. I work at the Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory at MIT. That would be kind of a neat thing to say. But anyway, they developed this thing. It's called a micro-air vehicle. It's kind of like a tiny helicopter. It has four spinning rotors, and it's completely autonomous. So it just takes, I guess you have to tell it to take off. It doesn't just decide to do that. But once it takes off, it can go around in a building. It can go through windows that are like 2 feet by 2 feet, and it just kind of roams around the building. And at the same time it's roaming around, it's got a video link that, you know, you can watch what it's doing. And there's a video of this thing working on it. There's going to be a link on our website, geekspeak.org, that you should really look at. This thing's got a suite of sensors that maps the entire environment in 3D. It's using a lightweight laser scanner. And when you watch this on the video, you can actually see the walls building up in color. And it's just a really neat thing to watch.
It's really cool. I think it would probably be a better flyer of a robotic helicopter seems to be a much more stable thing than a I've tried to fly a helicopter.
Yeah.
And it's not easy.
No.
At all.
And it's got like a little like a wire that goes around each rotor, so if it bumps into something it doesn't chop it up. So, you know, you do have four rotors spinning around. If somebody's like walking in the building, it's not actually that safe. But it's got
and of course,
hey, look at the you know. It does fly around neck height, but it has wires that go around the rotors, so, and they're very lightweight, but they show somebody pushing it and it just kind of figures out where it is and goes back. But really a cool thing for like mapping. It can map out a building, and you really should check this video out. It's awesome to watch. I mean, yeah, you know, it's for a autonomous robot, this thing's cool.
Thank you very much, Al. Mm-hmm.
So I've got some thanks. Okay. Sarah Lani from Santa Cruz, she thanks Dr. Don. She says, thank you, thank you, thank you. That's three thank yous. Anne from Aptos, she likes Dr. Don, all the KUSP programs. We also have three anonymous donors, one in Salinas, thank you, one in Santa Cruz, and one in Scotts Valley. So thank you to all of you who have pledged.
Also, Microsoft kicks users in the side with a sidekick. What you say? Coming up in just a second.
But first, let me just remind you that you're listening to KUSP. My name is Lyle Troxell, and we are doing our annual pledge drive break the winter break or fall break?
It would be fall.
Fall.
It's very summery out right now.
Wait, it's not summer anymore?
No, it feels like winter.
It feels like summer out here.
It does.
For those that don't know, I grew up at KUSP. I grew up at the station. My father used to do a wonderful news program about arts and entertainment. It had different names throughout its conception, but at some point it was called In the Green Room with Peter Troxell. And he and I would, I'd take off Wednesdays from school about midday and jump in the car with him. We'd come down to the station, and I'd sit around playing with vinyl and gear at the station, cutting analog tape, reel-to-reel tape, making new mixes of things, while my dad interviewed arts and entertainment leaders in the Central Coast of California. So sometimes I'd sit in the air room and listen in as someone from the community that was out there with their art and their entertainment and their soul bearing to the public was interviewed and talked with my father about why they do what they do and what they're doing. We're talking about theater and music and visual arts to some degree as well. And as I did that, being a geek at the station and listening in on that, I got a real love for the station. I got a love for the smell of the place and for, it's actually a nice smell, by the way. It smells like vinyl. If you don't know what that smells like, visit the station sometimes. In any case, the records are still there. A lot of the people that are involved are still there. People I remember really well from years ago, Larry Blood, who still does our remote broadcast stuff. You probably heard multiple of our music shows that we broadcast live. Larry's actually in a van on location. He's been doing it for, I guess, 30 years. I don't know. And then, of course, everyone knows Johnny Simmons, genial Johnny Simmons. And I grew up with these guys as kind of uncles to me to some degree. And in growing up at the station, I remember one time I submitted a request to do music off of the station. I wanted to have a music show, and I submitted that to the person who was in charge at that point was Johnny for music. And about a month later, he responded with me and goes, you know, Lyle, you don't know anything about music, and we're not going to put you on air just because you're here. You have to know what you're doing. And it felt insulting, and I was sad, and I walked away and went off to college and did other things. And then when I came back, someone needed a fill-in for GeekSpeak, someone that knew a little bit about technology. My father at that point was station manager. And he put me in the seat for a little while just for a fill, and it went pretty well. I've been doing it for 9 years now, GeekSpeak, and I do it because I love the idea of connecting with my community. I love the idea of supporting the Central Coast with information and knowledge and helping to share the expertise that I've gained about technology with everyone else. I have a real passion for it. And I think that since you listen to GeekSpeak and since you listen to KOSP, you know that that passion is throughout the entire gambit of what we do, the 24/7 that we're on air doing this amazing content for you. And because you listen to it, because you appreciate it, I want you to donate to the station right now. I want you to call us up and tell us you're doing a great job. Please keep it going, and here's some money that can help.
The number to call is 1-888-777-1507. That's 1-888-777-1507. You can make a gift online right now at KUSP.org. Mary Ellen from Santa Cruz just called in and made her gift. She said she waited all week to pledge on GeekSpeak because she loves this show. But don't wait. I mean, you know, Mary Ellen, we appreciate this sentiment, but for the rest of you, don't wait, because today is the last day of the fall campaign. After this, we're done. At least that's our plan. We still have about $16,000 left to raise, so your support is important.
That might sound like a lot, but really we're asking for you to donate what you can donate, what you feel is comfortable for your budget. You know your budget. We don't. All we're asking is that you contribute to the amount that you can afford and that works for you. So please call 888-777-1507. Again, that's 1-888-777-1507. And as Johnny likes to say off air, it's 888-777-1507, which, of course, is fun. There you go. Give us a call. Of course, KOSP.org. Now, what's the sidekick thing, Ben?
Yeah, so T-Mobile has a smart device called the Sidekick, and their feedback forums have been very, shall we say, colorful lately. So basically, there's this situation with T-Mobile and Microsoft have, Microsoft-owned company has all of the data for these smart devices, these Sidekick devices, up in the cloud, meaning up on servers. Nothing is stored, as far as I can tell, on the actual phone itself. Now, you think, okay, that's kind of cool. You don't need, memory on the phone itself or anything. But on the 13th, their servers crashed, and their backup was not or didn't work. So
I love it when the people that are running the cloud, you know, this ambiguous thing that we try to describe all the time, they're like, oh, and the data is safe because it's up there, and
it's up in the cloud. Yeah, just trust
the watching
cloud.
Your content.
I thought you backed it up. You said you backed it up.
Well, really, it's just some schmuck like me sitting in a room somewhere going, I should work on those backup tapes at some point.
Right. So to be fair, Microsoft has now come out and said that they managed to recover the Sidekick data, but. If it was, and this is yesterday, I think, that they came up with that.
Don't you have to do something specific to recover it, like not turn off your phone and wear a hat and
so T-Mobile Sidekick. Based on some of the feedback in the forums, T-Mobile wasn't being very clear about what to do. They were telling the media to tell people not to turn off their phones, because if they turn off their phones, they lose all of the cached content that's in their phones, which is all the rest of their data. And, you know, with none of it up in the cloud, that's kind of an issue. So they were telling people, don't turn off your devices and don't let them die. Don't let them run out of battery. I would not want to be
don't stress out at all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. don't stress out. Well, anyway, they pretty much came out on the 13th, or maybe it was the 14th, and said, this data is not recoverable. We're very, very sorry. On the 15th, they said, all right, we finally figured out we can get all of the data to be restored. But this really does raise some questions about how secure and how safe your data is in the cloud. When you throw things up on the internet, is it really safe? There have been some other situations or other examples of data loss where, you know, the backup solution wasn't sufficient, or the backup solution went down with the normal servers and everything was just gone. I can't remember. I can't recall the name.
It was a journaling site.
Yeah.
A personal journaling site happened recently.
Yeah, we covered that.
It was gone. Yeah.
Yeah, we covered that like 5 or 6 months ago, and it's gone. All of it. Like years and years worth of forum posts and blogs were gone. So don't I guess what I would say is don't trust the cloud to, you know, keep all of your data safe. If you have a choice, make backups. With the Sidekick, maybe that wasn't an option because as far as I can tell, the Sidekick wasn't meant to store your data locally except in a cached form. Their whole idea was keeping everything up in the cloud, meaning contacts, calendars, all of that stuff. So if your calendar just disappeared, imagine what that would be like. So anyway, Microsoft's taken a hit, sidekicking users in the Sidekick. and T-Mobile's reputation is definitely down a bit too. So I'm sure they're hoping they can recover from this.
Thank you very much, Ben. Hey, Al.
Hey. Speaking of social networks, I don't know, I guess we are speaking of them now because I'm bringing it up. This particular search engine is called Vark.com, and that's short for Aardvark. Aardvark, it's a new kind of tool that lets you tap into the knowledge and experience of friends and friends of friends. You know how the network works. You know, you join Facebook and you've got like, you know, 7 friends, but all of a sudden you've got like 40,000 friends because they've got friends and one of them knows Kevin Bacon, and just you have a really big network, and it's actually quite extensive just joining anything. Well, this search engine allows you to ask questions, and then it will send the question out to people that it thinks can answer the question. Then these people answer the question and then send it back to you. And it uses, you know, Twitter and IM, clients, email, your iPhone. It has a web page. It's a little weird to think about a search engine like this. It's not really, you're not like searching for something specific. You're asking a question, because I joined this thing just to try it out because, you know, I'm talking about it. And I put in a question, any good robot stories out there? But Vark came back and said that question was too short. So then I changed it to, does anybody know any good robot stories? And it accepted it. So I don't know. I posted that about 9:47. And Vark said it would get back to me in a few minutes with an answer. And sure enough, about 9:57, about 10 minutes later, Vark, it used my IM client. I had AIM up. It was iChat, an iChat client. And it, people started answering questions, you know. It kind of was sort of neat. It was a little creepy. The people who answer the questions don't know who you are, and you don't know who they are. But somehow they're in your network. So it's anonymous, which is this whole thing about being on the web. You know, you can do things anonymously, and you get these answers. They're kind of stressing that the social aspect of it, you know, that this network exists. When you join Aardvark, or Vark at Vark.com, you tell it your Facebook, your you know, all your social networks, and it knows that, and it, you know, signs in and it can access your group, whatever your network is, and it can actually follow you around. It keeps you completely anonymous though, so you can have a conversation with somebody on IM, like when, yeah, this person, you know, contact me back. I was able to ask a couple questions back and forth, but everything goes through Vark, because Vark will say, well, somebody said this, and then you say, but what about this? And then Vark says, well, I'll ask that question and get back to you. So it's like you're always talking through somebody, kind of. That's how it feels. So it's a little bit weird. I think they're really expecting you to ask questions like, does anybody know of a good place to eat in Santa Cruz?
Right.
You know, but I know all the good places to eat in Santa Cruz, so I didn't ask that.
Does it actually submit to all the people you know the question?
It looks through their profiles and finds people that it thinks will be able to answer your question.
I don't like the whole it thinks thing.
Right.
That creeps me out.
Right.
All right.
So it's really weird.
And that's Vark, V-A-R-K.
V-A-R-K. But there's one thing I want to mention about, mm-hmm, about joining these kind of things. And that is that, you know, I joined it because, you know, I had to tell everybody about it and see what it was like. And it was kind of neat, and I signed up for it, and, you know, I'm able to tell you about it. But if I did that with everything that I saw on the web that was kind of neat, I'd have a spam folder the size of Monterey Bay.
That's true.
And so what I was going to do was just give people, you know, this is how I do it, and it's a little tip. I don't use my main email address when I join all these weird things. I have my own domain. And I have some, you know, it isn't that technically difficult to have your own domain. And most of the time when you have it, you have like a web interface that allows you to add forwards, you know, emails, right, that are the same domain as you. Mine is luckow.com, but you can give it a different name. So it's really forwarding to your main email address. So when I joined Vark, I put my name as Vark@luckow.com. And then I know that I can either deactivate that forward if I want, if I'm getting too much spam, or and I also know who's sending me the spam. You know, yeah. If I go to a convention, especially if I go to like NAB or Macworld or something like that, I'll use macworld@luckow.com. And whenever I say, oh, yeah, send me some information, I give them that email. So that way, after a certain amount of time, they've got a few months to get me information. After that, I deactivate the email, and then I'm safe. Otherwise, you know, if you have a main email address and you just use it for everything, you're just going to be inundated and paralyzed.
Oh yeah.
You know, with spam, and it might be worth exploring that. Some people just get a new Hotmail account every time, but that's right. Crazy because you got to keep
multiple accounts. Got to check them. Yeah. You know, the other thing about that is if you do have an account and you're running a website, more normally when you run a website, you actually have your own domain. You can make email addresses for people that have a date in them. So you know, I'll make very commonly some email address like Al. May 2009. And that's when I'll activate it and I'll put it up on the website. And then as people start using it, pretty soon spam starts coming in. I disable that one completely and even bounce it back to the user. And then I make a new one, you know, okay, now it's September. And that way, a human being, if they happen to save that in their address book, and it was actually something that they want to be able to contact you, they can kind of figure out what's going on.
Right.
And
yeah.
They kind of know
that's
it's a temporary
good idea.
Thing.
Yeah, but you know, literally nowadays you have to do something to protect your main email address. You
just and of course, for people like us, where we own our own domains, it's even more problematic for us.
Right.
All right. This is our fall pledge drive, and we are taking your donations during this whole hour. Fine human beings are standing by waiting to take your calls. The numbers are 888-777-1507. It's been a while since we've done a break. Don't make us do another one. Go ahead and call right now and make a donation, 888-777-1507. Ben? This is Ben Jaffe, also in the air room, Al Luckow, and my name's Lyle Troxell. Running the board and helping with pitching today is Terry Green, the station manager for KWSP. Ben, NASA?
Oh, NASA. Oh, yeah, I see. Yes. Okay. I want to talk about the NASA LCROSS mission, which is fantastic. Basically, it's called the NASA Lunar Curator. That's CR in the word. Observing and Sensing Satellites, LCROSS. And the purpose of this mission was to try to figure out more about what's on the moon. And so they crashed it into the moon. And looked at the spectrum of the dust and everything that was kicked up, just to try and get an idea of what is actually.
This is the whole blowing up the moon headlines multiple times, right?
I mean, we've done this. This is the 20th time we've done it. You know, okay. So like it's not actually
a little exaggerated.
Yeah, it's definitely quite
a bit.
Your
moon explosions will vary.
Yeah, and in fact, actually, a lot of people were pointing their telescopes up at the moon. To try to see this explosion, and no one saw anything because it really wasn't very big, and it wasn't very visible either. But anyway, yeah, it was an $80 million mission, and it's this two-stage thing where they launch off the part that's in front up ahead of the main body of the vehicle, and then that part in front crashes into the moon, and the back part of it also crashes into the moon, but first it watches the first part crash. And they had all of these instruments on board, a visible camera, some near-infrared cameras, mid-infrared cameras, visible light spectrometer.
You mean, so it's really close. It's like right behind it.
Yeah, it's like right behind it. And so all of these, yeah, they had 9 instruments in total, and they were all gathering data as this first, as the forwardmost part of the vehicle that they launched ahead of it was crashing into the moon. It collected all that data and was streaming constantly back to Earth. Turns out it worked very, very well. They don't have anything to announce as of now. They did this back on October 9th. And, you know, again, it wasn't very visually stunning, but
right, but that information. Very yeah. Cool idea to say we're going to crash beyond the moon. Instead of just looking from telescopes, we're going to actually follow right behind it with a second part of the orbiter.
Yeah,
it's
a really
exactly
smart idea.
Yeah, very cool.
It's a very smart idea.
I think it's interesting. We talk about NASA missions, and there's something like a 50% failure rate, something like that. It's really hard to do what they do.
Is there 50%?
I don't think it's that high.
No,
I've heard that it's that high, and I didn't believe it. But
maybe it was 1 in 5 or something. But
let's pretend it's 50%. No, we don't know. In any case, there's a percentage of failure rate, and these crash missions seem to always succeed. I wonder why that is.
No.
It's easier to crash things on extraplanetary bodies.
Yeah, it's so funny. I mean, it's amazing that we can send something from Earth and hurl it through space and end up hitting something like Mars. And even hitting something like Mars in such a way that we can touch down on it safely.
That, or something that is Mars or Moon. For example.
Yeah, or even the Moon. I mean, the Moon is a pretty big target, but you know, you imagine how much technology actually goes into getting this to happen correctly. Like, it's really, really, really cool. So,
Next up, thank you very much, Ben, for the LCROSS mission update from NASA. Next up, we're going to tell you about an iPhone app that just might save your life. It did it for one woman, but what was it that she was saved from? You'll find out in just a second. But first, let me let you know that Ben's story right there was an example of a headline which you heard probably multiple times. Things crashing to the moon. Ah, crashing the moon. The moon's going to be blown up. Scientists blow things up on the moon. And that's pretty much probably all you heard. And that's all I heard multiple times. And so now Ben took a look at it, really got a feel for what was going on, told you that it was actually quite a bit of an innovation in what they were doing, this second stage module recording the first stage crashing. That idea. That information is available, of course, online for some research. But the truth is that our perspective, the geek's perspective on this information, is something that you can't do by yourself, unless you're a geek, of course. You probably get a little bit of knowledge from us just from our understanding of how science technology works, because we're experts in what we do to some degree. We are able to bring some enlightenment to the news stories that you hear. And that's what we do all the time. Now, I don't normally claim a lot of expertise in this field. We are, you know, entertainment. We're fun, right? But I listen to KWSP all the time. And when I'm listening to a really good jazz show and I have someone that knows their stuff, I learn a lot about the music. I get turned on by new music. And that only happens because there's someone in the seat at the station making that content for you, spending time all week long figuring out what to play during their 3-hour, 2-hour show, and producing really excellent content. You listen to KWSP because of that excellent content. For us to make that excellent content, it takes money. It takes money to pay for the station. We rent the building. We have transmitters on multiple mountaintops. We have staff that run all these things. There's quite a bit of expense involved. And of course, all we do is ask that you, twice a year, all we do is ask that you donate what you can to the station. Terry, we've got a challenge?
That we do. And a very generous one at that from Geek Speaks fans, Jim and Judy Warner, who phoned in just a couple of minutes ago. They will match every pledge to KUSP as we wind down and wrap up the fall membership drive up to a total of $1,000. So if you make a pledge right now at KUSP.org, or you make a pledge by phone at 1-888-777-1507, your dollars will move us twice as fast to finishing the drive successfully, thanks to Jim and Judy Warner.
Now, Jim and Judy Warner happen to be friends of mine as well, partially because of this show, possibly because of KWSP, because we both listen, we all listen to KWSP, and they started listening to Geek Speak a while ago. Jim actually works at the university. He's an amazingly powerful geek in network technology, and I go to him all the time for expertise on networking. And he helped create the infrastructure that runs UCSC's networking, and he's just a great guy to know, a great guy to be a part of, and of course, he appreciates what we do on KWSP as well. Judy does, of course, as well. And Jim and Judy, thank you so much for donating this challenge to all of you to donate to KWSP. And it's a wonderful offer. Call right now and go ahead and make that challenge a reality. Go ahead and give a call right now and donate what you can donate. We can bill you monthly if you'd like, if that's easier for you. We can do a lump sum. You can call right now and give any amount you'd like. We'd really, really appreciate it. The numbers are 1-888-777-1507. That's 1-888-777-1507. Go ahead and call us right now. Or go to KUSP.org and pledge online. Okay, what's up with this iPhone app saving someone's life, Al?
All right, well, there's an app for everything, right? Yeah, there. You know, actually, I saw a spoof of an app on YouTube called Nude It. I don't know if you ran across that one.
I
mean, we should probably
do it. Makes everything nude.
You hold it up and it makes it look like it's a spoof. You know, obviously it doesn't work, but it's.
I wanted a cup of coffee this morning and I picked up my iPhone to wait. That can't do that.
Yeah,
there aren't apps for everything.
Well, this app apparently is the entire iPhone itself. Vermont hiker Chris Rowley was approached by a bear, and it kept following her, and it kept
not
it
a good
kept
thing.
Get creeping closer and closer and closer. So finally, she just got really nervous, threw her iPhone at it, and the bear stopped following her, went right after the iPhone, and ended up chewing the iPhone up, and she was able to get away.
So the iPhone didn't actually hurt it. It was just distracting.
Well, it apparently really wanted the iPhone. I don't know. I don't know what the Genius Bar said. You know, you could bring that iPhone back and show the Apple.
I think Apple will probably give her a free one if she tells the story.
Phone isn't working anymore. They probably look at all the teeth, claw marks, and everything, and look at it and say, "Let's check the thing and see if it's gotten wet." Because it seems like, you know, I've had to return my iPhones a few times, and the only thing they really care about is if it's ever gotten wet. They put a little endoscope or something inside the earpiece, and there's a sensor inside there that changes color if it's ever gotten wet. And if your iPhone hasn't gotten wet, I think pretty much anything you do to it, they just give you a new one.
So it depends on how much slobber this bear had.
So if this bear had a lot of slobber, she's out of luck.
That would really be amazing if that was the reason that they cited to her for not replacing her iPhone. Yeah. I'm sorry, this has water damage.
Bear saliva is not covered.
If the endoscope would sense a different color of change of the material.
Yeah.
That's bear saliva. This is fully covered.
Yes. Oh, yeah, we covered
it. What are the chances?
We recognize
color. You know, if the warranty company were able to write it, I bet you anything they'd write a policy for bear damage. Like, no problem. Yeah, we'll let you pay for us first.
When would that ever happen?
Yeah, no problem. You know? Wonderful return value. Yeah. And, of course, all of her friends got this horrible message on their text.
Hello? Right? Yeah. Anyway,
hey Ben, thank you very much, Al, for the bear attacks iPhone story. Ben, you got a thank you for us?
Oh, yeah, I do have a thank you. Thank you to Elliot from Marina. Thank you very much. And they like the new shows in the morning.
And Elliot, of course, all that Elliot did to be mentioned on air is listen to KOSP and decide that KOSP is important to him or the people that are around him, and decide to go ahead and give us a call. And you can do that too, of course, 888-777-1507. And I would recommend that you do right now, as Ben tells us about. Well, just a second. Again, 888-777-1507. Ben, hopefully no one listens to you because they've all picked up the phone. What's going on with EPA?
Okay, I'll cover some really boring something. I know. So we have all these issues in the world. One of them is that we have all these toxic contaminated landfills and mines and things like that they're called brownfields, you know, and they're just sitting around.
Really
no one can really
places.
Do anything with them. And then the other issue that we have, another one of the issues we have is that we want to build all these wind farms and solar arrays and geothermal plants and everything. But where are we going to put all of those? You know, like we can't put them in wildlife habitat, and we don't want to have to spar with building contractors and everything. Well, turns out, if you haven't guessed already, turns out that the EPA is actually going to be reusing toxic sites for putting up renewable energy devices, being windmills or solar or geothermal plants, which is a really cool idea. And yeah, that's pretty much a news story. I like the idea.
I like the idea of going and figuring that out by using the sites for something. It's a very good idea.
It's kind of a different way of approaching it.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, Al, iPhones being bears, or someone saving someone's life from a bear because of an iPhone. What about iPods? They help out at all?
Well, it turns out an iPod isn't quite the great thing that you think it is. Here's an example. This woman ran a marathon, all right? And she was listening to her iPod. She was the winner of Milwaukee's 26.2-mile lakefront marathon. Her name is Jennifer Goebel. And she was stripped of her title because she was wearing an iPod.
Why?
Well, it sounds pretty lame, but apparently USA track and field rules state that elite runners competing for USATF championships or cash prizes aren't allowed to use electronic devices. Everybody else is free to. So if you're wearing an iPod and you're deciding they want to go into a marathon and you win, you might lose your title.
Wait. Everybody else can wear them, but the winner can't?
No, not if you win. No.
Wait, I don't understand. How do you...
Obviously, the iPod is why you won, so you can't wear that.
So basically, if you wear it, you're saying, I'm not going to win.
Basically, yeah. You know, all the marathons that I join, I always assume I'm going to win.
How big are these marathons? You know, sometimes they're huge, right?
Yeah, this is a huge one.
5,000 people decide they won't win and run anyway. But, of course, marathons, of course, normally are not for the actual aspect of winning. It's a challenge to oneself, right?
Yeah.
So if you're challenging oneself, you can listen to music. If you're trying to beat other people, don't listen to music. Whatever it is. Maybe she was listening to some, like, chanting or something. It was giving her supernatural powers.
There's all sorts of weird rules. She was... she was disqualified for actually for another reason the actual person who won before her was disqualified because they accepted a bottle of water from a friend instead of the official water station.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you really got to watch it. I guess an iPod can get you in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. That's what I hear.
Yeah.
And so an iPhone saves your life from bears, mm-hmm. and iPod makes you lose.
Yes, iPhone's the way to go.
You also have something about Amazon.
Oh, yeah. I just read Amazon is now offering same-day service.
How?
Well, there's a certain number
have
of
books
cities.
Waiting by.
They've expanded the amount of hours in the day.
They just made their they made their warehouses large enough that there's actually one a mile and a half from your house.
It's like they've got that thing Hermione wears in
they get way back. What is it called? Ben?
It's turn. Wait, what, me?
How geeky are
As
we?
If
like,
I
you're the
know?
Youngest one. You're like 15, right? You should know anything about Harry Potter.
I can call my sister. She would know.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, they're focusing the actual same-day service on cities of New York, Philadelphia, Boston, Washington, Baltimore, Las Vegas, and Seattle, and some surrounding areas.
Same-day service for everyone. Everyone inclusive only of these locations.
Yeah, and they say, right? Yeah, well, but that's, I mean, think about that.
It's amazing.
You're ordering, and then you get it that day. It's like the thing on Star Trek where you just like, you know, Earl Grey tea, you know, and it just comes out. You know, it's just like instant, you know, being able to get something the same day you order it. It's just, we're getting so close to that. It's just amazing.
We're getting closer every day. Well, normally you'd think that, you know, we talk about technology enhancing all the time, the data storage and processing power all gets faster and faster all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it's Moore's Law, actually, that talks about that. But you don't expect that to kind of infuse our society with, like, delivering products. But, of course, really the reason why they're able to do that is because the efficiency in ordering is so good. Almost everything is, you know, mm-hmm. robotic to some degree.
Well, you do have to order by 10 a.m.
Oh, well, there you go.
So they don't have a time turner.
They don't have a time turner. But no. Thank you, Ben, for the reference. Yeah. Time turners.
Time turner, is that what it's called? Good,
I called my sister really fast right there.
I'll mention one other Amazon story, and it's actually Amazon and Walmart. They have a little war on price of books. Basically, Walmart a few days ago said, you know what? We're going to start selling like 10 books, the 10 top-selling books, for $10 a book. And so we'll do that online. And basically, they want to be, what the execs and stuff are saying from Walmart is, we want to be the online Walmart, because we are Walmart. And so they're trying to compete with Amazon, which of course, is currently the online Walmart. And Amazon's response was, all right, fine, we'll sell $10 books too. And of course, it looks like these retailers are losing about $7.50 a book, depending on how much they're getting them for and stuff. If you just look at what the retail price is, you drop that in half, they're dropping that even more. So they're really losing some money on these books. But, of course, they're getting customers. And so they lose a lot of money, but they make it up in volume. It makes perfect sense. In any case, once the $10 deal thing happened, Walmart turned around and said, well, we can do it for $9. And I think Amazon's now doing it for $9. So basically, if you want to buy the 10 most popular books, go ahead and either of those sites, and you might want to call them up and ask them to drop the price even more. I don't know. That's just an example of the online market being really, really important. Okay, I mentioned Moore's Law a second ago, and we're going to talk more about Moore's Law. Ben, Moore's Law, what's up?
All right, Moore's Law. The Slashdot story that I got this link from says the ultimate limit of Moore's Law, which is not actually accurate, correct. That's the way we use Moore's Law. Moore was just talking about how many components you can fit on a single integrated circuit, but a lot of people have kind of expanded that to being processing speed or memory capacity or, you know.
And what he said is the density of processing power of the stuff you can put on a chip doubles every 18 months is what Moore said.
Yeah.
And the side effect of that are all these crazy things that are processing power doubles and so on.
Yeah. And definitely it's cited as every 18 months. Some people cite it as every 2 years, but in any case, around then. Well, it turns out that at the Boston University of Massachusetts, some physicists have calculated based on the theoretical fastest quantum process that you could have. They've calculated a ultimate speed limit to calculations, and that's assuming that we continue at that pace.
So what you're saying is that physically, our ability to manipulate information in the physical world will run into this theoretical quantum barrier.
Yes, and I mean, so this is actually the barrier. Just to put it out there, is 10^16 times faster than our current chips, today's fastest machines.
We got some headroom there.
So that's, in English, 10 quadrillion times faster.
That's barely English.
That's a lot. Okay, 1000. No, I'm not going to do that.
No, don't do that.
16 zeros. But so at the current pace, if we were to continue every 18 months doubling, then it'd be like 75 or 80 years, and then we'd be at that limit. And of course, as we approach that limit, we're going to start running into more and more problems. I mean, you know, like when you go buy a car, the speedometer says, you know, 220 miles an hour on it, but you can't necessarily go that fast, even though maybe the engine could theoretically handle it. That's not the best example, but no. You get the idea.
Yeah. Physical limitations, but they're really far away.
Yeah,
so the question is, when you double and double and double, how long is that 16 zeros from us? How many months? How many years?
Oh, it's 75 or 80 years.
Okay.
So if we were to continue at that pace, which we probably won't.
I got to say, I really like being in D.C., learning about what NPR is doing in public media. And I am actually remote. I'm not in my lovely home of Santa Cruz. I have never done a remote broadcast of Geek Speak. I've always been there. And I'm there because, of course, I live in Santa Cruz County and love being in the Central Coast. I love the community that I'm involved in there. And but being out here and connected and throwing myself into another station, which looks familiar, reminds me about how small our world is, how similar, you know, some of the sliders here in this studio are very similar to the ones in the studio in Santa Cruz, how small our world is. It's quite a wonderful experience to do that. And I really want to thank WAMU for hosting me to be here remotely. Al, I think we've got room for one more news story before we close out the show and do the USB of the week.
Well, this is a kind of a neat thing. It's at thefuntheory.com. And what these guys do is they make normal things, you know, mundane things feel fun so that you'll do them more. As an example, they have a video that we'll be posting on our site where they have an escalator right next to a set of stairs, which oftentimes you see. Well, they set up the stairs so that each step was like a piano key, and as you walked up the stairs, you'd be playing the piano. And then they had a video on this, and they showed what people were doing before they did this, and everybody was getting on the escalator. And then after it, like, nobody took the escalator. Everybody went up the stairs.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
I mean, just a neat thing, you know.
We put these everywhere, and we have a more fit nation. That's wonderful.
It's a fun video to watch, too. And and at funtheory.com, they also have a bunch of other videos where they get people to use garbage cans and use the recycling bins more.
But, you know. There will be so many twisted ankles, though, when musicians get on those stairs.
Yeah.
That's true. There'd be people falling down the stairs.
I know I would. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I want to play with them right away.
It's neat.
The Geeks every week put all the news stories that we cover up on our website, geekspeak.org, just as another service. So you can look at these videos we talked about. You can see the helicopter flying around that Al mentioned earlier. Anything we talked about during the show today is actually up at geekspeak.org. Coming up next in just a second is Al's wonderful USB of the week. So stay tuned for that. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Dr. Don Motika and OptimageHealth.com in Santa Cruz, providing personalized solutions to health concerns by combining conventional medicine with a wide array of functional medicine techniques. Details at OptimageHealth.com. Here's the USB of the week.
Ah, space. Carl Sagan said it best. Somewhere, something incredible is waiting to be known. Throughout the vast history of humankind, we've longed to reach for the stars. We make up stories about them, give them names, poetic names like Orion or Rigel or HD 95735. We all agree stars and planets are fascinating, but you might not be able to hop into your hover jet space rocket and re-aim Hubble just yet. Which brings me to the GeekSpeak Crazy USB device of the week, the USB webcam with telescope. I know what you're thinking. That name isn't descriptive enough, Al. What exactly is this thing? Well, to put it more simply, it's a USB webcam with a telescope. It has VGA resolution, 7x18 strength. It says it only works on Windows, but personally, I think that info is outdated. Macs handle all sorts of USB things now. I also posted a link on how to make your own USB telescope if you want to try doing that. So, I'll leave you with one final quote on astronomy. Casey Kasem once said, "Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars."
Thank you, Al, for that wonderful USB of the week. Let me just mention, you can call right now and still get in the pledge drive. 888-777-1507. 888-777-1507. For KOSP and GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. See you next week.